jocks from hell. I left the road in a frenzied fishtail, bumping over the ditch into a field of tall wheat. Not far behind, three carloads of redneck kids with guns. My V8 Ford surged through the wheat, but so did the fancy sports cars the kids' dads had bought them. The rough ground played hell on my steering, the cars behind me honking annoyingly. I had met up with them while driving in the country roads to ease my mind. They started flipping me off and tailgating, calling me a faggot and such. Three cars and about seven kids. I flipped them off and they went to a rage. How dare I flip them off? Who the fuck did I think I am anyway? It was on. In the suitcase beside me was a quarter pound of marijuana and a couple hundred dollars. This interaction could easily end up with the police intervening. But the kids all have football jackets and I have drugs, I thought. So things looked bleak from any angle. Earlier in this chase, some of the kids brandished guns and were openly guzzling beer. And they made my drug illegal, I thought, as a bullet ripped the passenger side rearview mirror. A handful of other shots had rung out, and I didn't know if they're trying to kill me or just firing into the air. I rounded a corner too fast and ended up in this field. I floored the gas pedal and bumped over the earth. Only one car remained in view. It was some red flash car, I didn't know the model. But he must be trashing that nice paint job Daddy paid for. If only I'd brought my handgun. It was just a clumsy six-shot 32, but it sure beat the nothing I have right now. I suddenly twisted the wheel to the left and faked him out. He kept going straight while I moved on in a 90-degree angle. I floored the car again, trying to press the advantage as he turned around. I came out of the field on an unknown road. I bumped hard over the ditch again, and my engine began to knock. Something was jarring loose or something. Ahead was one of the three jocked cars, parked in ambush. A big stupid-looking jock with a 9mm handgun began plugging away. As I sped away and the other car smashed through the wheat field, a couple holes ripped through the back windshield. One bullet spiderweb cracking the front windshield on the passenger side. The only thing for me to do was drive full tilt into the field on the other side of the road. This gave me an edge, and I bumped and jarred, knowing the extent of damage this must be doing to my car. The car stereo was still playing one of my Beatles CDs, Penny Lane, played during this life and death pursuit. "The barber shaves another customer" is a line I still find disturbing to this day. I crashed through the field and broke out the other side into a farmer's field. A few cows scattered as I raged on. The car behind jammed its brakes and twisted out of control. I kept glancing out my rearview mirror to see the jockmobile come to a stop and then turn around. Good news, I thought. Maybe they've given up on the chase. Now the rage surged through me. I wanted their blood and couldn't have it. No gun for me. Guns and numbers for them. Still, I felt a primal rush of bloodlust. A primal desire to put them in the earth bleeding. I drove through the muddy field about two-thirds of the way. My car got stuck. With a long series of curses, I was outside to see if I could do anything. Smoke was curling up from the hood, and the tires were well buried. I went inside my car and grabbed my suitcase. My head whirled with explanations for the farmer who owned this land. I feared that he would be on their side and needed just to pull out of the field and a miracle to get my car out of here. On second thought, I opened up the suitcase and pulled out my weed. I packed my big glass steamroller and stashed the rest of it in my underwear. I hope no one would notice the bulge. I smoked as I walked through the field. One of the bulls was acting aggressive and it paced me as I walked, thrusting its head from side to side like it was practicing goring. Again, a gun would be nice right now. I vowed to start carrying one. A nice handgun with a couple extra clips. I meet up with psychos more often than cops anyway. Close by me was a fence. An old, worn-out, rusty barbed wire fence. I ran and climbed it as the bull charged. I barely made it, though. I bent over and picked up a handful of dirt. I flung it into the bull's face and it blinked and stomped away. "Take that, you fucker," I told it. As if being a fucker is really an insult, anyway. No sign of the farmhouse, but a thick grove of trees loomed ahead. This could give me cover, and maybe the farmhouse is just inside this grove or on the other side. I smoked in the woods. Still no sign of the jocks. I guess they must have gone home, or gathered somewhere to ambush me on my way out. Not realizing I'm not coming out anytime soon due to my car being stuck. But as the buzz washed over me, I forgot the story I was going to tell the farmer. I packed and smoked two more bowls. I felt like I would die here and I wanted to be well stoned beforehand. Some beer would be nice. If I could only get some. Later, I would get smashed. About 3 hours of light left in this bad day. Maybe a good night would follow. I stashed the steamroller and the weed in those dark woods, hoping I would get back along for it soon, but not wanting to be caught with it. I walked straight down and ended up behind an old, leaning farmhouse. Overgrown weeds choked a lot of the view, but I saw several decrepit buildings along the way to the house that looked like animal shelters and storage places. The place looked abandoned from this angle, and I hoped not. I needed a phone. Although the farmer living here might not like my long hair much and call the law on me. Beer cans littered the whole area. Some brown of rust, others looking like they had been dropped recently. As I broke into the overgrown backyard, I saw there were strange objects in the yard. One man was trapped in one. It was a wooden construction that hid his body inside its blocky form, leaving his head exposed, sticking out the top. There was a sharp-looking blade that was fashioned so it could lop his head off if someone was to grab the handle and slide it forwards. I stopped in my tracks. The man heard my approaching footsteps and craned his neck around as much as he could to stare at me with panicked animal eyes. I grew weak with horror and felt like I was going to topple over, frozen like a rabbit on the spot.
"Quick, let me out! He's coming! He's coming!"
I stood there staring for an unknown but probably short time, still frozen with dread. There were three other devices like this one the man was in. One had dried blood on its blade. I lurched forwards at him and into the open of the yard. The man box was padlocked 3 times, and steel bolts held it shut. I looked at it dumbly, my mind nearly shutting down.
"Hurry, hurry, he's coming! He's coming!"
The man screamed, his eyes bulging, his limbs thrashing inside the box. I didn't know what to do. Had he not been screaming and freaking out so much and shattering my nerves, maybe I could have found a way to let him out. By the time I walked halfway to the nearest barn-like building in search of a tool, I heard heavy footsteps coming from the side of the house. This can't be happening, I thought, as I stared at a figure approaching. He was about 6'5", dressed in dark, shabby clothes. Most frighteningly, he had a big block of rough cement over his head with no eye holes or nose holes. Yet he moved with very unblind purpose, and I didn't doubt he was aware of me. The trapped man behind me began wailing like a broken soul, and he kicked, and that kicked me into motion. I ran back the way I came from, leaning forwards so far I felt like I would fall over. I heard the cement-headed man pursuing me, making a loud show of it, like he was very heavy. I sprinted like a deer, running faster than ever before. I ran through the woods, where I felt I'd left my stash, stretching myself up and with the branches, I flung myself along. I couldn't hear him behind me anymore, but I kept going, breathing hard by now and losing wind. I entered the field I had come here through and ran another 60 feet before falling to the ground puking. The vomiting was brief, and I scrambled back up running again. I had a searing side ache and was breathing very heavy by this time. I came to a dirt road and ran to the other side of the field, no sign of the jocks or anyone else. I bent over with my hands clutching my knees, trying to catch my breath. The breeze stirred the field behind and the field in front of me. Sounds like someone was approaching from all sides. Paranoia had taken me, and I lurched forward and down the road, not quite running, but more of a rapid stumble. This went on for a long time before I slowed to a walk, and that was as much as I could handle. A couple times a vehicle went by and I hid in the nearby fields until it passed. Never got a look at it. I walked 20 minutes down the way I had driven to get here. The landscape opened up more and there was nowhere for me to hide if another vehicle passed. Even so, I rested in the ditch for about 4 minutes and felt a little better. I stood back up and rapid walked another couple miles. A small town lie here festering away. All the houses had peeling faded paint and some had boarded up windows. In front of an apparently open for business diner was a payphone. The thing worked. I called my friend Jimson Jones and begged him for a ride and speedy arrival. As I claimed I was bugging on acid and stuck in a small town, my pockets bulged with throwing rocks I had picked up along the way. After I got off the phone with Jameson, I pretended to be talking because I didn't want to explore this creepy town after my last two encounters with the locals. I fished out a couple throwing rocks and gripped them, held them tightly, visualizing myself throwing them with lethal accuracy, seeing that cement head crack as the body falls. This is a mental exercise I do in times of danger or boredom. An old lady walked down a street, creaking her way to a grocery store that was the best conditioned building I could see. Must have been built around 1965 or so. She glared at me with mean, disturbing eyes as she went by, rudely stopping to turn and stare some more, a while with her face pinched up in righteous hatred. A cold wave of fear came over me as I imagined her telling all she met up with about the long-haired no-good-for-nothing on their payphone. "Hurry up, Jimson, hurry, hurry," I said over and over again like a mantra. Was that cement A mask? How could he breathe like that? Or see? 15 minutes later, Jimson arrived in his 98 Mustang, and I quickly got in it and said, Let's jet. He gunned the engine and we flew down the road. The nightmare town receding as I told him the real story of what happened. He didn't seem to completely believe me. He thought I was on acid or salvia or something. But he bought the jocks part of it. His brother had been kicked to death by city jocks after a fender bender with a nice new daddy bought it for me sports car. Jimson slowed his Stang down to the speed limit and fished a couple beers up from the cooler in the back seat. I greedily drank mine and asked for another. I wolfed that one down and proceeded to drink two more so fast it made my head ache.